have NDEs that you would like to describe in this hour as we launch into open line shortly, that would be just spiffy. All right, now, the lead story this hour is a real shocker, in my opinion. A lead story on the Associated Press basically is Army to launch probe into Tillman death. What's up with this? The Army said Saturday it's going to launch a criminal investigation into the April 2004 death of Pat Tillman, the former professional football player who was shot to death by fellow soldiers in Afghanistan in what previous Army reviews had concluded was an accidental shooting. Colonel Joseph Curtin, an Army spokesperson, said the Defense Department Office of Inspector General, get this, had reviewed the matter at the Army's request and concluded that a criminal probe was warranted. Wow. That one, in my opinion, is definitely in the shocker category. And then this. Gliders tracking whale calls and ocean waves. Now listen carefully. Ocean scientists can now plunge into the middle of the sea without ever leaving their offices. 6-foot, 100-pound underwater gliders, and they show one of these things, are swimming the oceans of the world and dutifully sending data home on everything from whale calls to the massive waves produced by hurricanes. Several ocean scientists reported on the use of underwater gliders at the biannual Ocean Sciences meeting this week, sponsored by the American Geophysical Union. How interesting is that? Now, if they've got, it looks like an airplane, all right? They've got a little photograph of it. Looks like an airplane. Can you imagine this thing is gliding underwater and reporting back on everything that it sees? Now, most of our planet is water, right? The only time we get UFO reports are pretty much when they show up over land. But it seems to me, particularly if they don't want to be seen, that UFOs, and we've certainly had reports from ocean-going vessels and captains and people like that, that they have seen unidentified objects entering and leaving our oceans. So this thing, you know, if they gave us the information, would pick that up, right? So if there's something going on in the biggest part of our world, the oceans, now we've got something down there to tell us about it. I mean, you know darn well the nuclear subs we've got down there and others have down there are not going to report on anything like that. They'd never report one of those to steal a line, right? But these are civilian scientists. They might report on one of those things. Huh. That's absolutely fascinating. I think absolutely fascinating. I'd sure like to see the data that comes back from those underwater gliders. Did you have any idea that was going on? We're going to have open lines for the balance of this hour shortly. But right now, before I forget it, which I have a tendency to do, let's break. Last night, I gave you a number of headlines. I'd like to fill you in on a few of the details right now. Again, repeating what James Hansen said from this Boston article. And he, remember now, he is the number one man at NASA on climate. So take his words seriously. He said these the models he's using reveal a miserable situation at present, but a dire one in the years ahead. In his December speech to the Geophysical Union, he noted that carbon dioxide emissions are now, quote, surging well above the point where damage to the planet might be limited. Speaking to a reporter from the Washington Post, he put it bluntly, having raised the Earth's temperature 1 degree Fahrenheit in the last 3 decades, we're facing another increase of 4 degrees over the next century. That would imply changes that constitute practically a different planet. The technical terms for those changes include drought, famine, pestilence, and flood. Well, hey, that almost sounds biblical. It's not something we can adapt to, he said. We can't let it go on another 10 years like this. And that's what makes him so dangerous now. He's not just saying the world is warming. He's not just saying that we're the cause. He's saying we have to stop it. Now, not wait yet a few decades more while Exxon and Mobil keep making record profits. Not wait a few decades more until there's painless new technology, something like hydrogen cars that let us drive, you know, happily into the future. Not even wait a few years until the current admin can cut and run from Washington. The president indeed recently said we've become addicted to oil, which, according to the Boston Globe, is a little as though Abe Lincoln suddenly noticed the South had slaves. So, you know, that's a man I think you all of us should be listening to. Now, this article, remember last night, if you were listening, there was some discussion of feedback. So listen to the following carefully. This is not from a minor source. This comes from ABC News. Point Barrow, Alaska. Recently, it was another beautiful sunny day out on the Arctic tundra. It may sound nicer that way, but it's a big problem for Earth. You know, that place we live, folks. Scientists say the warm weather adds to global warming because of, here it comes, feedback loops. In a feedback loop, the rising temperature on the Earth changes the environment in ways that can create even more heat. Scientists consider feedback loops the single biggest threat to civilization from global warming past a certain point. The tipping point, they say, there may be no stopping the changes. No matter what you do, in other words, no matter what you do, no matter what you stop driving or stop emitting, it's going to keep going. Scientists working on the Arctic report that feedback loops are underway right now as the frozen sea surface of the Arctic Ocean melts black, essentially to black. There is less white to reflect the sun's heat back into space, and more open dark water to absorb the heat, which then melts the floating sea ice even faster. That's what they mean by a feedback loop. The hotter it gets, the hotter it gets. The more it melts, the more it melts. Faster and faster and faster. More than a third of summer sea ice disappeared in the last 30 years. That's more than a third of the ice up north. In the ground, next to the ocean, scientists say, warming has also awakened another enormous danger, billions of tons of carbon locked up for eons by what once was frozen ground. Said Walter Ochel, I feel very uncomfortable about it. He's a scientist studying all of this. He said, quote, I mean, it's not the way the Arctic ought to be. End quote. Duh. He discovered that as global warming thaws and dries out the vast tundra, old, decayed vegetation begins releasing carbon dioxide. That's the same greenhouse gas that comes from cars and plane exhausts and power plant chimneys and so forth. And the tundra releasing the carbon dioxide warms the atmosphere even more. A feedback loop, folks. This is something that feeds on itself and gets bigger and faster and worse every minute. It's a slow motion time bomb that's speeding up and could become self-generating. Humans are putting about 6 or 7 billion metric tons of carbon into the atmosphere every year, the scientist adds, and we're standing on 200 billion tons here. If any significant portion came out that dwarfs the current human injection into the atmosphere, and once that runaway release occurred, there would simply be no way to stop it. They report there are an additional 200 billion metric tons of carbon now beginning to leak from the northern boreal forests that encircle the Arctic tundra, apparently for the same reason The rising temperatures are drying out the forests, which means that more decayed vegetation is getting released, yet more carbon dioxide. Ochell says the new carbon-free energy technology, like injecting greenhouse gas from power plants back into the ground or ground zero emission cars, will be vital for maintaining a livable planet eventually, that is, once they're developed, if they are. But he says the longer we wait, the worse the situation gets, the harder it's going to be to crack. He says by his calculations, the only possibility for preventing a runaway greenhouse effect on Earth is to begin reducing the use of fossil fuels like oil, gas, and coal immediately. So he obviously agrees with Dr. Hansen. It goes on and on. Antarctic ice sheet losing mass. This is from Science Daily. University of Colorado at Boulder researchers have used data from a pair of NASA orbiting satellites, there you go, in tandem to determine that the Antarctic ice sheet, which harbors 90% of Earth's ice, has lost significant mass in recent years. Now, again, that ice sheet, that ice is 90% of all the ice on Earth, and it's melting. Now, doesn't this seem to you, ladies and gentlemen, like something is drastically, horribly wrong? I said last night, I can feel it in my bones, something absolutely awful is coming. I could be, and I hope I am, totally wrong. But as you read these stories and you listen to these experts, how can you not imagine we're in deep doo-doo? The World Meteorological Organization, WMO, said it saw unprecedented signs, get this, pointing to a new looming La Nina, a phenomena that originates off the western coast of South America and can disrupt weather patterns in many parts of the globe. Now, I'm telling you, this is connected. It is, they say, unprecedented in the historical record of the world, short as it may be, for a La Nina of substantial intensity or duration to develop so early in the year. It has not happened before. Under La Nina, the sea surface temperature in the central and eastern tropical Pacific falls way below normal. This typically will bring much drier weather to the southwestern U.S., we're already pretty dry, Florida, and western Latin America, and above average rainfall to Australia, Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Philippines. Scientific American. Here's another one. Scientific American. Magma on the move beneath Yellowstone. Guess what, folks? It's moving down there. Much of Yellowstone National Park is, in fact, a giant collapsed volcano, or caldera, if you will, in an enormous eruption about 640,000 years ago. The Discovery Channel did some on this, and it was incredible. The volcano spit out around 240 cubic miles of rock, dirt, magma, and other material around 70,000 years ago. Its last eruption filled in that gaping hole with flows of lava. The area has enjoyed a very uneasy peace ever since, the land alternately rising and falling with the passing decades. New satellite data now indicates that this uplift and subsidence is caused by the movement of magma beneath the surface and might explain why the northern edge of the park continues to rise while the southern part of the caldera is falling. So in other words, put another way, a portion of it is bulging. Now, if all of this is not enough to give you the heebie-jeebies, I don't know what is. Let us proceed with open lines to the top of the hour. And at the top of the hour, we're going to be joined by a physician who wrote a book called What Happens When We Die. NDEs, usually not a subject researched by physicians. First time caller line, you are on the air. Good morning.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
Hey, this is Mike in Grass Valley, California.
Yes, Mike.
I have two quick things to say. The first one's quicker than the second.
All right.
That feeling that you have, Art, about in your bones about the bad thing.
Yes.
I have the same feeling, but I think it has more to do with people like Al-Qaeda than it does the environment.
I hope you're right, because trust me when I tell you, anything Al-Qaeda could do would pale in comparison to what Mother Nature could visit on us.
You're absolutely right about that. The second thing is, I watched the Discovery Channel the other night, and they had a documentary on that incident in, I believe it was Illinois, about the four or five police departments that saw the triangular-shaped object with the lights on it.
Oh, my friend, I interviewed those police officers. I know all about it, yes.
Now, I came up with this theory. It occurred to me that I wonder if it's possible that the United States government actually has a stealth blimp, and they fly it around at low altitude with the lights on as a means of disinformation. In other words...
The answer to that is absolutely yes. Of course it's possible.
You think?
Of course it's possible. Now, I saw one, as you know, not more than 150 feet above my head. Now, could it have been a stealth balloon? Sure it could have been. Sure, it could have been, but what would the motivation of the armed services or whoever it is be for doing that?
Well, you see, the more of those things you see flying around, then the less likely you are to be surprised by an actual accidental sighting of a genuine top secret aircraft. What do you think?
I guess, it's as good a theory as any I've heard.
My brother saw, I'm guessing 30 years ago, he told me about three triangular-shaped objects going through the sky silently.
Yes.
And it's my brother.
Wait, excuse me, wait a minute. How long ago?
Oh, God, I mean, it had to be 30 years ago.
30 years ago.
25, 30 years
ago. Well, yes. I don't think that 30 years ago he saw any U.S. government stealth a triangular object, my friend. That, no way.
I don't know.
I think I do. If we have such a craft, it's only in very recent years. Now, there's absolutely no way that I can deny the possibility that that it is a secret U.S. aircraft. Of some sort. Of course it could be. But it silently flew above my head. It certainly didn't look like any lighter than aircraft to me. Not at all. And when I say silent, and I've repeated this several times, my wife and I could hear the crickets, you know, a quarter of a mile away. We're out here in the middle of the desert, not all that far from Area 51. And this thing just silently traversed directly above us, and then we stood and watched it disappear toward a west northwesterly direction, which would be indeed Area 51. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good evening, Art.
Good evening.
Steve from LV.
Yes, sir.
So, on subject with tonight's guest, the way I see it, there's four ways that the NDE has been documented. You know, a few of which are self-induced, which would be the meditative state, the drug-induced state.
Yes.
Then you get down to the Mayo Clinic, where they've drained the blood out of everybody to do the brain surgery and whatnot.
Right.
And the people that get the blood drained out of them, they're not having any NDEs. The people that have the cardiac arrest, that do the DMT, that do the deep meditation, they report the experience. So that leads me to believe that perhaps, you know, there's some proof or some truth to the fact that the brain acts as a computer. And if you shut the computer down through this, you know, draining of the blood and freezing the body to something, your computer doesn't work.
Now, wait a minute. I don't know that I agree. I mean, where is your research showing? I'm certainly familiar with the people you're talking about. But how do you back up what you're saying with regard to they have not had NDEs? Once again, top of the hour, a physician on NDEs. And let me go back now to my caller. And I, again, sir, what I was asking was, how can you really be sure? I haven't read the reports one way or the other. Have you on people who have undergone the kind of operation you were talking about?
Just one. You know, it was the woman, I believe she was a guest on Coast to Coast. I don't know if you interviewed her.
I did. And she was also a subject of a 60 Minutes story. But yes, you're right, just one. So, you know, that's a far from a reasonable sample, in my opinion, to come to any conclusion in that category.
Well, actually, the correlation I'm trying to make, Art.
I see what you're trying to do. That's clear. I can see where you're going. I'm just saying.
Well, no, here's the deal. Actually, you know, if the brain or the mind, brain, soul, whatever it is, connection is like physically involved with the body, then perhaps there's some software, whether it's through meditation, dimethyltryptamine, or clinical death, that actually allows you to transfer yourself to the other dimension or wherever you go when you die.
Yeah.
Perhaps whenever they drain your blood and everything, it's you know, you're not allowing the computer to function like it should, you know? You're pulling some software out.
Well, no, I clearly could see where you were going with this. I'm just saying, thank you very much, that a sample of one is not means nothing. So there are some rare instances in which, for one reason or another, a person does have their blood literally drained. And then a procedure follows. But we don't have, I mean, look, only a portion of the people who have physical or experience some kind of physical death even report NDE. So there can't be any corollary to reciting one story. I think you'd have, maybe once this operation is more mainstream, and we have a lot of them, we can make some kind of statement about that, and I certainly agree that's worth researching, but at this point tells us nothing. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Morning, Art.
Good morning.
It's a real pleasure to talk to you. I want to express my sympathies to you, too. I know I've gone through a similar experience. As about the near-death experience,
yes.
I had a heart attack in 1999, and when they took me to the hospital, they brought a woman in who was having a heart attack, and they had her on the other side of the curtain from me.
Right.
And we were both seizing up at the same time, and they hit me with paddles, and then they hit her with paddles.
Wow.
And what we could see, I could see, like, lights flashing as I was going through this from her side of the curtain. And it seemed to me like, you know, like there was like auras coming off of both of us.
Were they working on you simultaneously?
Yeah.
Yes?
We were both having cardiac arrest at the same
time.
Well,
yeah, they don't put on those paddles unless your heart has stopped or gone into a rhythm that is so deadly that, you know, you're going to be dead anyway.
Well, mine had stopped for, they said, like 14 seconds, and I heard them talking later about her, but when they medevaced both of us.
May I ask a couple of questions?
Of course.
During those 14 seconds, do you have memory of what was going on? Did you hear things? Did you perceive anything? What happened?
I could hear voices, and I could hear them saying, he's flattened, he's flatlined.
Really?
And, you got to hit him again.
Really?
I say that.
Oh, my God. That's really something. I mean, so in other words, you know, I have I guess nobody has a way of really understanding how long it takes the brain to, put it in quotes, die. But the fact that you were hearing that, were you still in your body? Did you have any physical sensation that felt like it was like you were out of your body at all?
I felt a little separation. I felt like I kept bouncing, but I don't know if that was from the electrical shock or
right.
But I wasn't like bouncing, like it wasn't like a vibrate, like a pogo stick bounce. It was more like a little float up, float down, float up, float down, and then I settled into
really?
It again.
Uh huh.
And then they got me stabilized, and they were gonna. They said, "Okay, we're gonna put you on a helicopter," and you know, like I thought that the woman next to me was having a rougher time. So I said, you take her first. I said, they said, well, if you take her, you're going to die. So I said, well, put me on a helicopter. It's okay by me.
This experience, has it changed your view at all of whether there is life after death?
I've never really had a view on that. I've, you know, like been kind of, you know, like accepting my day-to-day life as, you know, like something that I'm just experiencing it. I have no idea what's going to happen next.
None of us do.
And I've been, you know, like happy to be around, you know, like it makes you appreciate you know, the little things more.
Every
know,
day, like, yes.
You know, take a deep breath and, you know, get up in the morning, your eyes pop open, you say, wow, I made it through another one.
Well, okay, thank you. It's interesting, when I get up in the morning, I'm just, I'm slow to enter the world. I can't say that my eyes pop open and I say, what a beautiful day, my God, look at the sun streaming through. No. The way it works for me is, I wake up, stumble out, grab a cup of coffee, and sit there and try and inject life into my veins. And then sometime later, an hour or two later, I'm able to observe the world in approximately that fashion and say, whoa, beautiful. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Art.
Yes.
This is Jeff from Cibola, Arizona.
Hello, Jeff.
And I have been a long-time avid listener of your program, and I do a little newsletter from your program.
Promoting the program. Wow.
It's called The Chronicles of the Ambassador on Sci-Fi, but I've been an avid watcher of the weather. And I have a feeling that before all this really super bizarre stuff, which is already gets a little thicker, we'll probably see a little heavier UFO activity.
You think that the climate change, the environment, is connected to the presence of others?
Yes, I do. It's a big scope. I think, and we're at an evolutionary peak in our souls out here, too, on this planet.
An evolutionary peak?
Yep. I think we're evolving spiritually outside of Christianity, outside of the Muslim thinking, more on a grander scale than what those two can even come up with.
Well, you know, I would like to think you're right that we're evolving, but I'm not sure, frankly. I mean, we're evolving technologically. There's no question about that. Nobody would argue that. We're evolving very quickly technologically. But are we evolving spiritually? Are we evolving? No, not really. I mean, from taking a look as an alien would at our planet, are we at war any less frequently? Are we killing each other any less frequently? I'm not so sure that an alien could make any sort of positive judgment from looking down. International line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Art Bell.
Hi.
You are truly a national treasure. I am an alien, or ET, as my fellow human brothers and sisters refer to those of us who are not members of the race of human beings who live on the surface of the planet today.
You're not a human being.
I am a human being. I'll rephrase that. I am an extraterrestrial who is living as a member of the human race.
All right. Well, this is exactly what I've been looking for. Where, out of curiosity, if you can tell me, are you calling from?
Toronto, Canada.
Toronto, Canada.
Yes, multicultural city.
I see. Well, You're a human being, and you're an extraterrestrial.
Yes.
Living among us. Now,
yes.
You have a pronounced Canadian accent.
Actually, most people say that I'm English.
Well, yeah, I'm a little bit English in there, perhaps.
But I've been living as a member of the human race for a number of decades now.
That would account for it.
Yes.
Hey. Well, so, you know, having you is indeed a valuable thing as well. So having you here is very valuable. Tell us then.
My pleasure and honor.
Well, then tell me what it is you're doing here. What is your mission? Why are you here? And how are we doing?
Thank you for asking. My name is actually Commander Ashtar, A-S-H C-A-R. I am the commander of the civilization that has been misidentified as the Nephilim for the past 6.4 million years by the members of the human race. My civilization is actually called the Neverines. We are the Neverines.
Huh.
Yes. We're the oldest civilization in this physical universe.
Well, now, wait a minute. Are you extraterrestrial, or are you more like, I don't know, an angel?
Actually, all beings, all beings, no matter where they live in the universe, they're actually ETs, because they go from one part of the universe to another to live mortal lives. Who am I? It's not really important. However, the reason calling is important.
All right, good.
In response to your question about what exactly is going on, why do you feel it so much inside your bones that something awful is about to take place
yes.
on the surface of this planet?
Yes. And the answer is?
Well, the answer is, first, I must point out that over 97% of the true history of the human race, races who have lived on the surface of this planet for the past 663.6 billion years, and also the true history of the identity of each of the immortals who now live as members of the human race, over 97% of that truth has been completely lost to the human race for over 6.4 million years now.
So you're immortal.
I'm sorry?
You're immortal?
All beings are immortals. When they live in mortal bodies, they are considered mortals, just as I am today and you are now, and all those who are listening to this show who are members of the human race. We're immortals who live mortal lives.
Okay, I can accept that. So again, you were going to get to why
Okay, the reason what is taking place is this. Planet Earth is in the process of undergoing the end of this age. But this is not the first age of the Earth that is about to be completely reconstructed. This is actually, we're actually near the end of the 23rd age of planet Earth. Hmm. The Mayan calendar, by the way, it's not a 5 million year old calendar. It's not a 5,000 year old calendar. It's a 5.3 million year old calendar. Now, the reason why 97% of every member of the human race today is feeling inside their bones that something is about to take place for the past 65 months, approximately, is that the end of the 23rd age on this planet is about to take place. And it will begin at the start of the end of the Mayan calendar. So the Mayans didn't just...
All right. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I would like to know how it's going to manifest itself. When this begins at the end of the Mayan calendar, what should we expect?
Okay, good question. It's a process. Each of the 23 ages that have come and gone from this planet, there's a reconstruction process that planet Earth goes through during a 44 period.
Reconstructing from what?
The planet itself is completely reformed and reconstructed through. You would call it a cataclysmic process where the continents are pulled under and new ones are brought to the surface. The end of the last age, by the way, was the end of the days of Noah and company. That was 23.6 million years ago.
Okay, so it's kind of like a reset. In other words, start from zero.
No. Mother Earth is a living being, and she has to rebuild and reconstruct and transform her body, just as we all do. We cleanse ourselves when we become ill and toxic for different reasons.
All right. Well, we're drifting here. I appreciate your call, and I appreciate the insights. And certainly what he said could occur. I mean, there's ample evidence that the Earth, there are many who believe that the Earth has been populated. Then depopulated right down to the, you know, the size of bacteria or smaller, and then life again appearing, and it may well have come and gone many times. So that reset that he talked about, well, you never know. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, Art, my name's Eric. I'm in East Missoula, Montana.
Yes, Eric.
Back about 12 years ago, me and my dad and a close family friend of ours were traveling back to my hometown of Troy, and we saw something that maybe you could shed some light on, because I know that you got a lot of UFO experience there with you.
Not really. I mean, I've talked about the subject a great deal and seen a couple. That's about it.
Well, maybe you can shed a little light on this. We was traveling up to Bull River Valley up Highway 56, heading back up to Troy, and now you got to understand, there weren't nobody on this highway.
There weren't nobody?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was probably about 10, 11 o'clock at night, and it was starting to snow a little bit. It was nice and nice and still, and all of a sudden we had this blinking light up above our truck.
Mm-hmm.
We stopped right in the middle of the highway there and got out of the truck, and it was just pure quiet. But this light was up above us.
How far?
I'd say what it appeared to be was maybe about 200 to 300 feet above us, and it
okay.
was really bright.
And?
It was just like hovering there, and we couldn't really see what it was coming from or anything, and then it just was gone.
And that
just
was
like
it?
Like that. And this is a really tight valley going
you,
up.
You had no experience like missing time or anything of that sort, right?
No, but we couldn't explain what this was, and it was completely quiet. We thought like maybe it was a helicopter, but there was no sound whatsoever.
Helicopters are inherently noisy.
Oh, yeah.
Even the quiet versions.
I mean,
I doubt it was a helicopter.
And so that's why I was wondering if you could shed some light on what this possibly was. This bothered me for going on 12 years as to what this was. Like I said, we stopped and we shut off the truck, and we were standing out there looking, trying to figure out what this was.
All right, fine. It was a Class 3 saucer from Zeta Reticuli. Does that help?
All right, Art. Thanks.
I mean, obviously, I'm not going to be able to nail down what it is. It was a light above your vehicle. I have no idea, sir, what it really was. And
you haven't heard anything like that from anybody else, huh?
Well, of course, I've heard a million stories of lights that, you know, suddenly disappear, lights that are UFOs, unidentified flying or floating objects or something. I've heard a million of those stories, but to call me and ask me what is it?
Yeah.
No way. Can I, any more than the next guy, identify what it is? So
you
I appreciate
think it might have been governmental or something?